This episode of the show is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free 30-day trial and free audiobook of your choosing by going to audibletrial.com/missspots. Choose from over 180,000 different titles, such as Chris Jericho's latest book, No is a Four-Letter Word. It's even narrated by the man himself. Audiobooks are perfect for the person on the move. Believe me, they're great. Maybe you want a mystery novel or a biography of someone you love. Audible has it all. Plus, it's free to try. If you don't like it, which would be weird, cancel and keep your free audiobook that you downloaded forever. Go try it now at audibletrial.com/missspots. Audible. Listening is the new reading.
You know, Mike, when we don't have a pay-per-view, our wrestling week usually ends on Tuesday night around 10 o'clock. And it just dawned on me that in a month, our wrestling week will just be halfway over at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday night. And the thought of this has led me to drink heavily.
This and other depressing truths coming up on the Miss Spots podcast.
Time to play the game.
All right, so we're back after a 1 week break. We typically take a 1 week break every year just after SummerSlam to kind of refresh our gears and refresh our livers or minds or whatever. I think that this 1 week off has only hurt my liver, hurt my mind, and I didn't watch any wrestling last week.
Well, you had some extenuating circumstances. You moved across the country.
Not across the country.
You moved across a large swath of the country.
There you go.
There we go. And then you moved in to a hurricane. So you've had a rough go of it. I completely understand that. I did not move across a large swath of the country, but did have to do a lot of hurricane prep, which means a lot of snack foods, which means I ate most of them before the hurricane even got near, and drank most of the beer. So I'm kind of in the same boat for slightly different reasons.
I drank most of the beer. Now I got to eat all of the junk food that I procured, and I'm not looking forward to that.
Congratulations, Mike. I'll help you out with that.
But we have now jumped right back into wrestling this week, and there was some good stuff, I believe, this week. And once again, I think a lot of the shining moments are these King of the Ring matches.
The program, just from a top to bottom, is a much better product than it was 2-3 months ago.
Yeah.
And there continues to be really strong bright spots, really good in-ring action. And even the things that we've seen 1,000 times before, I don't know what it is, but there is a level of freshness to it. And that starts off just with the contract signing that we had to start off Raw, and we get the interruption by AJ Styles. We had the people in the ring actually defending themselves. They didn't get into a fight. I know it's because of the circumstance and the situation that they're tag team champions. And I still am a little bit bummed that Anderson and Gallows don't have those titles. And I don't think you need those titles to make this match between Seth and Braun work. But I think they're working well with what they have. I thought that the setup was good. The fact that it just led into a random tag match with Bob Roode and Dolph Ziggler, little less encouraged by that, a little less excited about that. Or I'm sorry, that led into a match with
Braun and Seth against the Good Brothers.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you're exactly. Then Bob Roode and Dolph had a match with
Hawkins and Ryder
afterwards. Yeah. So I got those two matches conflated. But yeah, this was. The two matches didn't mean a whole hell of a lot, but for some reason I liked the vibe in the opening segment.
Yeah, and I thought that this was going to be some little mini story that was going to continue through the entire show of just the OC giving hell to Seth and Braun. And it didn't necessarily play out like that. We did get a random jumping of Cedric Alexander by the OC not long after this, which maybe will be talked about. Maybe that's going to lead into Cedric and AJ having a title match.
That's got to be it.
Yeah.
They have to set up a match, right? Because every championship needs to be defended.
Exactly.
And as they said, they don't have a challenger. And Cedric can go in there, put on a great match with AJ, and continue to raise his stock in the company. So I think that that was actually a pretty smart idea. It also just shows the callousness of the OC and the fact that they're just going to beat people up in the backstage for no real good reason. They're starting trouble, and I kind of liked it. That this is what we should have gotten from the Riot Squad instead of just pouring out someone's coffee.
Very good.
I believe they did at one point. There was, as I did say that I like this episode of Raw, there was a lot of stuff that just kind of seemed like laying the groundwork for something in the future. We had Lacey Evans come out and beat up Natalya. Natalya is basically used as a, she's used as a gatekeeper to a certain degree, but she seems to be used to start storylines that she never ends up being in at the end. We saw this with Sasha Banks. We've just seen this over and over again. Ronda Rousey feuds.
She's an extra.
Yeah, she's just kind of an extra layer to start something off and then spins off into her own thing. Lacey going over Natalya, I think they basically have a little bit of a reset there with the character. She failed miserably in her quest for Becky's championship, which she should have, and now they have to start her on a road.
I don't know if she should have failed miserably.
Well, I'm just saying that the crowd never really got her. No. I don't think she was.
They were annoyed by her.
I don't think she was ever at the level that deserved that opportunity. She definitely felt shoehorned into it, and while she's got a great look and tons of athletic ability, they've got to start the road of rebuilding her in a hopefully a slightly different way. And I believe that this was what they were doing with Natalya and her.
Yeah, and I gotta say, one thing did make me laugh during this whole thing, and that was Natalya's most polite way of jumping Lacey.
Well, that seemed like a botch to me. That seemed like someone's timing was off. She was early. Lacey was late. But yeah, that was a little bit adorable.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a shame that Natalya is pretty much settled into this also-ran extra. I mean, she's extremely talented when it comes to in-ring action. But who knows where this will go with that said. And at least they're going to try to attempt a restart on Lacey.
Which I think is a good thing. We hit a lot of the same notes with the Sasha and Becky promo, but I liked the stuff that went on there, and I thought it was a solid way to go forward with their feud. And once again, like the vibe, like Sasha's attitude, like Becky's. First of all, what is she keeps on? What does she say? I know she says the word "dopes" all the time. Weirdo,
freak, a little weirdo. Yeah.
Take that out of your lexicon, Becky. It sounds a little bit too childish. You're a badass. Calling someone a little weirdo, it seems like something that my mom would say. That's not a good thing.
It's also weird for her to call someone out for dyeing their hair because her hair's not naturally that orange.
Sure. But overall, I like where we're going with this. I like the vibes of this feud, and I think that we got a lot of good stuff in front of us.
Plus the little teases that we got in the Bailey interview in the backstage later on.
And a little bit of that, I don't know if you did. I saw that coming a mile away. right? I really felt like we were going to see Bayley turning on Becky Lynch is exactly what we saw at the end. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about Bayley joining the dark side, but really seemingly not? She's fighting Charlotte Flair, who's a straight heel, mm-hmm. at the next pay-per-view. And
I'm just not even going to attempt the name.
Yeah, I know. I cannot remember what it was. Clash of Champions?
There you go.
Did I say Night of Champions?
You did, yeah.
Yeah, so thanks for calling me out, bro. I was going to smooth right past that thing, and then you got to freaking go
you
ahead
and You just gave
that.
Up. You were like, Night of the next pay-per-view.
Yeah, exactly. And it would have been fine if you hadn't highlighted it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
But I'm just wondering, I mean, what are your thoughts on Bayley here?
I like it. But I do think that this is going to be a very short-lived thing, because I think that this is ultimately going to lead to Bayley versus Sasha. I think that I don't necessarily know yet who I think is going to win this Bayley or this Sasha and Becky match. Luckily, I don't have to make predictions this week, but I think that they're going to go for a Bayley Sasha big match, big feud at some point in the future. So, and we know WWE's MO is not necessarily doing things for the long term. So I'd like to think they're going to pull the trigger a little too soon. I'd love to be wrong and see them just planting seeds every now and then. And then in maybe 6 months or so, maybe leading up to Mania, have it be the Bayley Sasha feud for a Mania match.
We know that they had magic before. I like seeing Bayley as they never did that character right on the main roster. They never played up her naivete in a way that was realistic and not childish. They never played up the fact that she just couldn't hang physically with the other members of the Four Horsewomen, which they easily could have done. They just didn't know how to present her. And now, we're years later, she no longer is a kid. I mean, when she wasn't a kid, when obviously she came up, but I don't know how old Bayley is now, but the older she gets, the more ridiculous the side ponytail and that kind of childish wonder becomes. So now we've got to have this character evolve, and a heel turn could really be a big part of it. So I hope this is what that is. Even though I saw it coming a mile away, like, I'm not special. I think most people probably did. I like this. I think this is a really strong thing going on. I like what's happening with Sasha Banks. I love the fact that you're getting Bayley involved in this, even though now we have a little bit of both women's championships in a similar feud, or at least in kind of orbit around each other, which always kind of bugs me a little bit, just because we've got two championships. Let's make them unique and defend it on their own shows. But I think the way they're going about this is really strong.
Yeah, I would agree.
And then the King of the Ring qualifying matches. Hey, I'm going to say something that most people don't like. Baron Corbin winning this was the right move.
I agree.
You have a situation.
And this was an awesome match, too.
It was a great match. It was really well done. Corbin looked good. He stopped wearing his vest to wrestle.
And right, button up.
Right there, he's like 50% better just immediately, because he doesn't look like as much like a freaking idiot. Now, stop wearing dress pants and a vest to the ring and you'll be okay. We had tons of people in this field that all deserve that rub, right? That all deserve that next step. But they all can't do it. One person can. And Cedric Alexander losing to Baron Corbin here after being jumped by AJ in the back after a barn burner of a match, looking great, or losing next round or losing in the finals, it's all the same.
Yeah.
Right? So keep Baron Corbin, someone that people despise, in this, and just make sure he doesn't win. He can go to the finals, but just make sure he doesn't win.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good, because we also, the WWE has one thing working for it, our cynicism. When we look at Baron Corbin, possibly if we see it in the main, in the finals for the King of the Ring, we're all going to go, they're going to get us to Corbin, aren't they? Right? And then if they don't, we're going to lose our minds and we're all going to be happy.
Yeah.
So I just think this was a really solid thing. I was not as excited by the Ricochet and Joe finish.
The finish, yeah.
But it was a little different. I guess. I don't know why neither one won the match, but they're both get a chance to fight in the next round. It seems a little silly.
Yeah, history usually indicates that in a double pinfall like that, that both men lose.
Right. Okay, but I'll give you that. It still seemed a little different to me.
Yeah,
I like the way they they handled it with the ref backstage and at ringside. I like the fact that it seemed like a professional sports situation, not a sports entertainment situation to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. So I liked it. I just liked everything about this King of the Ring tournament so far. The matches consistently deliver. And I was going to talk about this with the Ali versus Elias match on SmackDown, but Mike, you were a little more of a student of the game than I am, because you've watched so much ROH, so much New Japan, you digest more professional wrestling other than the WWE than I do. Are we seeing different ring styles? Are we seeing different spots? These matches feel a little less WWE to me.
I would agree with that to a certain extent. I don't think that they are working slightly different styles, because these are these guys' individual styles, and they're allowing them to keep a lot of their signature moves, which are things that are very different than what we're used to seeing in the WWE. But they're not as dangerous and reckless as you might usually see on the indies or on some of the other promotions in Japan or ROH, things like that. It's just that we are in a wonderful time right now where there is some fantastic workers just on this roster. And this tournament is giving us a lot of them. And you know what? I take that back. Every single person in this tournament has been a fantastic worker. And yes, I'm including Baron Corbin in that, because
and
I know
Elias?
People hate him. Yes, Elias too. I think that this was this Ali match was Elias's best match he's ever had 100%. In the WWE. And I know a lot of people will give the credit to Ali, and that's deserved, but it takes two to tango. And we've been saying that for years, like when people were saying, oh, Brian carried Roman to a great match at Fastlane number of years ago. Roman was very competent in that match, and he's shown since then he is a very competent, two very good worker. And I think that credit is deserved where credit is due where credit is deserved. And Baron Corbin is a good worker. We've seen him put on good matches in NXT before coming up. He's been in some weirdly booked feuds and programs since coming up to the main roster. But dude is a good worker, and I'll give him that. And it's just been fun matches.
Maybe I missed it, but the one thing we always hear about Corbin is he just goes into these like headlock rest holds and all this kind of stuff.
It's part of Kevin Owens' shtick is to do rest holds.
No, but I'm not bringing that up to insult Corbin or even that style. But I didn't get that vibe in this match. Maybe I just missed that spot. But everything, it seemed, even with the match with Ali and Elias, things moved a little bit faster. I saw a little more innovation from both guys. And I saw it's not just doing a spot that a guy we don't normally see in the WWE. It's the pace in which that spot is put together. It's the action around it. It's the finish that doesn't seem like it's paint by numbers, A, B to C. There seemed to be, and this is totally could be in my head, but in both these matches on Raw and then both the matches on SmackDown, in the King of the Ring tournament, it seemed to get the crowd really into the matches.
Yeah.
They were popping for false finishes. They were popping for people kicking out. And there seemed to be a vibe in the arena that they were watching something more interesting than they normally get. Now, maybe it's just because it's a tournament. Maybe we were right, and we have been right for the past 4 years, saying that this is something they should bring back, and it's genius. But I feel like the wrestling has been a little bit sharper and a little bit more interesting.
I think that it has. I also like to think that for storyline purpose in that match with Baron, that Baron saw blood in the water with an injured Cedric and was trying to take care of things quickly instead of just wasting time. But Cedric was fast, and it caused him to need to be faster with things. So I liked what I saw there. Let's talk about the matches on SmackDown too. We can jump around, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
That's our show. That Elias Ali match, like Ali, I love this guy. Like, I just see so many great things in him when I see him get in the ring, and he's shown glimmers of really good work on the mic and in the vignettes. So like, I want to keep on seeing that dude. And I think that a loss here works for him too.
I don't think anyone's hurt here. I think this is a tournament with a bunch of guys that have high profiles. We have been saying for a long time that Elias, we know that Elias is charismatic. We know that he can carry big time segments with megastars. And we haven't seen him deliver in the ring. So good. He delivers in the ring. He's a bigger star than Ali. This is fine. He also wrestled, as you said, probably the best match he's ever had in WWE. I was going to say on the main roster, but he wrestled in NXT for a cup of coffee, basically. Yeah. So, no, this was very good. But there was just little things. The 450 spot onto Elias's arm.
Yeah, love that.
Like, there are just little things that I saw in this match that I was like, oh, I really like this. I love seeing working that body part. The super kick with Elias jumping to the outside looked brutal. It seemed
when he
like
caught Ali doing the suicide dive and suplexed him.
Hmm. Exactly. There was just so much going on in this match, and we really felt, and the crowd really felt into it. They're getting Ali over. Now, the less said about him walking around the streets and making people's lives better, you know, making a difference Ali, the better, because I don't know where that went or what's happening with that. I mean, it seems like they dropped that completely. But they're getting this guy over in the frickin' ring with little to no mic time. Isn't that brilliant? Mm-hmm. Isn't that amazing? We've seen the same thing with Cedric Alexander. We're in Buddy Murphy. We're getting these guys over in the frickin' ring.
And who'd have thunk?
And then when we're ready with one of these guys to elevate them to the next level, it just takes the right feud with the right person, and bang, bang, boom, they're an IC title contender. They're a US title contender. They're someone that we want to root for. And they've done it really, really well. And how often do we say this about WWE? How often do we say that they've gotten somebody over in the ring? This is a different product, man. This seems like a response to what's happening in the rest of the wrestling world. And from two guys who have just bitched and pissed and moaned for years about this product, it's really exciting to like what's going on.
Yeah, it really is. And then to follow it up with the Gable and Andrade match,
which was very, very good, but compact. It was a different kind of match. This one didn't go on forever.
No.
And I thought that was another good aspect of it. It was hard hitting. It was straightforward. And what's Gable's finisher called that?
Well, I don't know what they call it. I call it the Chaos Theory because it was invented by Doug Williams, who's a British wrestler. And that's what he called it. And I love that move.
I don't know, and I want to get your opinion to this. When he hit that and Zelina Vega distracted the referee, the vibe I got from the crowd that distraction false finish, which we have seen a billion times, mm-hmm. the pop on that, the excitement on that, brought me back to like 1997. I don't know what it was, and it might have been my interpretation, but it seemed like the crowd were just insane for the fact that the referee wasn't counting.
Yeah.
It seemed like...
Did they count along? I can't remember.
I can't remember. I just got this... Oh, I mean, I saw people jump up. I heard the roar of the crowd. People were furious that Zelina Vega was interfering. Wasn't the last time we really had that vibe in a match? Yeah. Because everything's so predictable. And the fact that it didn't end almost immediately with a hammerlock... Oh, excuse me. With a hammerlock DDT.
I popped for that. That false finish.
Yeah, it was great. And we've watched...
Or it wasn't even a false finish. I'm sorry. He countered the
with a roll-up. Really cool counter roll-up, too.
Yeah.
Another thing I hadn't seen before. And this guy, who we hope they're not going to call Shorty G, who's basically been a punching bag, which I would have said was... bullshit for the past several weeks, because he just sits there and takes this thing and looks like he has a pouty face on, all of a sudden has all this momentum. Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe they know what they're doing over there.
Yeah. It's something that has gotten me so emotionally invested in these competitors again. It's fantastic. excuse me. I'm sorry, we got a little off of Raw. Was there...
No, there's really nothing else to cover on Raw for me. First of all, did you have anything else to say about that match? Because I feel like I kind of monopolized your time there.
No. I thought it was, like you said, a great little compact... Actually, you know what? I do have one more thing. Just a little thing that I noticed that I felt went on with that distraction is, not only was it a distraction, but I feel like Zelina, even though it was planned, it looked like she improvised, because she tried to grab Gable's leg, didn't, and then was instead, know what, I'm just going to distract the referee now. And I liked how it seemed like she was thinking on her heels as well after she didn't get the first thing that she was trying to do. Just a small little thing. I think that was great for storytelling. And once again, a great match.
Yeah, exciting stuff. Well done. The only other thing of note on Raw for me, because we already talked about the Bayley turn, was the Firefly Funhouse and the ultra meta way that you have the Vince McMahon puppet upset about tweets and social media, right? This is stuff that doesn't usually come on to Raw. And then Bray Wyatt saying that it's okay because I make you money.
Yeah.
Right? You know, here we are. I have always said I'm always willing to admit when I'm wrong and I missed a boat on something. The 24/7 championship, still garbage. Hot garbage. Worthless television. Anyone watching it is wrong. Bray Wyatt, The Fiend, they've found a way, man. It is engaging. The meta commentary on this, even though probably is a little bit ham-fisted, I'm entertained. Mm-hmm. They've found a way to make the character special. They have not overexposed it. The introduction of the character was solid. I'm still a little underwhelmed sometimes by just attacking legends and superstars, but I'm hooked now.
You know, and he's going to attack Austin.
Yeah, most likely, right?
Yeah.
But the excitement...
Even though I know that, I feel like I know that that's going to happen, the anticipation is pretty legit.
But even that little, that kind of overdone, pulling the curtain back on in that segment... I just kind of snickered and I kind of got behind it because I know what Bray has gone through as that character. So, yeah, you got me.
See, we're always like, we've said this so many times. Yeah, we're cynical. Yeah, we can be dicks about this program and be bashing it. But we're always willing to admit when we're wrong or when we've changed our mind on things. Not even necessarily when we're wrong, when we've just changed our minds. And that's, I think a great thing about us is that we're not just completely going into this thing close-minded on either side, on just assuming everything's going to be good or assuming everything's going to be bad. But yeah.
You're right, Mike. We are pretty great.
As for SmackDown, the whole Bayley thing played out in the beginning here with... How did you feel about her kind of coming out and not really admitting that she did it, not seeing any reason for what she did being wrong and thinking like, I am out here to give you the champion that you deserve? Is she doing the delusional thing here? I mean, I guess so, if she's not willing to admit that she did anything wrong.
Yeah.
And do you like it?
You know, I don't know how to work with that. I mean, she also came out to her normal music, her normal fanfare, waving her arms around. Everyone's happy. It's a little bizarre, but maybe a good thing because it's not just like she hit someone with a chair and now she's evil. There can be some nuance there, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that's overall a good thing. She does want to put the... She is kind of in Becky's shadow. That does make some sense. And probably one of the better Bayley promos that we've seen. So overall, good for her. I am disappointed in the crowd because Becky Lynch is very good. And I know the crowd has cooled on her recently and some of it with... good reason with the pairing with her and Seth was a disaster, and a lot of the things that happened around that were bad television. But Becky's really right of the ship in a lot of ways. You know, sans the word weirdo, she's right of the ship, and in storyline it's going pretty well for her. But to hear people cheering Bayley for what she did, yeah, I know that we love Bayley, and yeah, I know that everyone's excited that she's now a bad guy. And that's going to be more interesting. But cheering that character after doing that, it's just really counterproductive. It doesn't bode well for the storyline. It doesn't bode well for the people in back. And really, I think it makes them have conversations of what the hell they're doing.
Yeah, and I think that this is a thing that certain fans have complained about in the past is... The quote unquote smart marks who will just always cheer the heels, and this can be somewhat attributed to that is we have Bayley who has been a somewhat stale character for a while now, and they give a little bit of nuance and some teeth to her, and the crowd eat or that certain segment of the crowd eats it up and wants to start cheering super loud for her because she turned heel. I can see some problems with that. And I remember when we went to WrestleMania, like you really wanted to make it a point that we cheer the baby faces and we boo the heels. We're here at a live event. We're here at the biggest live event of every year. So let's do it the right way. And like, there is something about that is the tradition in the way that the crowd is supposed to respond. You cheer the good guys and you boo the bad guys. So yeah, there is some weirdness there when she's getting such a crowd reaction now, and it sucks for Becky, who is the babyface,
and a damn good one at that too.
Yeah,
I mean. Yeah, it's just one of those things that there have been tons of times where we've been the crowd at wrestling shows and yeah. I'm not necessarily booing the person I want to boo.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm part of the spectacle. I'm part of what's happening here and I kind of know it. And that's not just because I'm like, oh, I'm so great. But I think that we all are part of it. And I think that's just important and something to always kind of keep in mind.
Yeah, imagine if like extras in a crime show just started cheering for the guy committing the crime. Like it would look really weird.
I want to see that now, unfortunately.
CSI Des Moines will probably have that on. But yeah, there's something to be said about that. And I don't think that it's ever going to necessarily stop as long as we are. It's just going to be the way it is. Wrestlers who people find are cool doing quote unquote cool things by being bad and evil, they're going to always have some sort of support, and you're always going to have those dueling chants when it comes to things. And I think when it comes down to if Becky and Bayley end up having a match, we'll probably get some dueling chants for something like that, both pretty loudly. But yeah, we'll take it at that for now and see where this continues to go. If Bayley continues to stay strong with that segment of the crowd, or if she's able to get them to turn on her truly and boo her like some great workers have been able to do, like Daniel Bryan.
And that's my hope. I don't want to see it just as like, oh, this crowd is a bunch of idiots. That's not what we're looking for. We're looking for good nuanced storytelling that hopefully will make that work.
Yeah. Is Aleister Black the SmackDown version of the Viking Raiders right now?
In what way?
In just that they showcase him and that's it. They give him a room to lead up to his matches that's kind of dark and smoky, and then he comes out and fights people for no apparent reason other than just to fight them.
Yeah, I guess there's some similarities there. They're trying to get these people over in that way that we maybe saw with the Viking Raiders. It's all Braun Strowman, right? It's putting them against just people. I mean, even this week on Raw, we didn't talk about it because it kind of didn't matter, but they put the Viking Raiders up against two guys and let them cut a promo in the ring, similar to when they were doing with Braun, which, hey, listen, we all thought that Braun was a big lug that could do nothing and ended up being something. We were wrong on that too. So,
and one of those promos got James Ellsworth over.
Right. So I think that they're right to do it. The Aleister Black stuff is a little bit stupid in my opinion, just because having a guy sitting in a dark room asking people to come fight me, like, you work on a wrestling show, go ask for a match. It's been very repetitious, and I thought when we had Cesaro step up and they went out and had some really good matches together that we were going to start building to something more for Aleister Black, and we just haven't. So yeah, having him go out there and fight Shelton Benjamin, yeah, okay, where are we going with this, man? The guy's good. He's over. I still think the guy's a freaking heel, but I don't see how this guy's a babyface, in my opinion. But that's just me.
Interesting. I feel like that this is a thing that you and I have definitely debated on. Was the alignment of Aleister in the past, and I still see him as a very solidly babyface character. But yeah,
I just feel like a douchebag sitting in a room asking people to come to him and waxing poetic seems a little bit, maybe it's just, I don't care for it.
I can completely understand your perspective. Yeah. I just somehow see it a different way.
Oh no. I'm not saying you should see it my way. I'm just trying to give some clarity, is that maybe it's because I don't care for the character. Maybe it's, I'm just looking at this and going, hey, I don't really like this guy, so hence he's a heel. But that's not really the way we should be looking at it.
Yeah. Now, maybe I missed something, but was there a reason why the rest of New Day didn't come out and help Kofi?
So Xavier was injured
a
couple weeks ago.
Okay, so he wasn't on the show last week either.
No, and they said that Big E was injured last week and has been in the trainer's room and basically is getting treatment. So he's not available. They mentioned that during the show.
Okay. I missed that then. Yeah. So that led into all of this, Kofi, man by himself, on a mission to stand up for his friends, his family, and himself, in this, 3-on-1 type of situation.
Yeah, exactly. This is another one of those feuds that has been a little bit dry. kind of paint by numbers, but I think it's working. It's working to actually make me somewhat interested in Randy Orton. I don't like the Revival being Randy Orton's thugs. I just kind of feel bad for the Revival because...
It is kind of weird. I feel like Randy's never been the type who has resorted to that unless he's in a faction.
Yeah, it seems a little odd. But overall, Randy has been motivated in this. He seems passionate about it. And this has been this is about my family. The aspects of this that are really interesting is their history. And I think that they might have been able to play even more into it than they have. But they've played enough into it to make it, to give it some teeth. The family stuff and the personal stuff has been literally, like I said, paint by numbers. This is exactly what you do. But it's working.
Mm-hmm.
Simple sometimes works. By the end of the time when we get to sit down and watch this pay-per-view, I think we're going to see a pretty fired up, a pretty intense match. I think it's going to work.
I agree. And then really the last thing of note that I feel like talking about with SmackDown is the Daniel Bryan, Roman, Rowan triangle of affairs going on here. Brian wanting an apology, Roman believing that he sicked Rowan on him. And this is playing out as if Brian was absolutely genuine in everything that he said. And this is going back, I'm going to take us back a few weeks now, but I mentioned when this first played out that when Buddy Murphy said that Rowan was the one who did it, I said that Brian had a look on his face as if he was unsure about what he just heard and didn't know if he believed it or not. And then you mentioned how it was probably working out, and I agreed with that, and I kind of went along with it. But now it's seeming like I might have been right in my first instinct. Not that I'm trying to say that you were wrong, but I like this long play on this. That made us think one way, made us think another, but also seemingly did plant a little seed in there that maybe a lot of people missed, that Brian was being genuine. There is still a chance that he could have had Roe and put him through a table on purpose and he was lying the whole time. But I think it's more interesting, like, believing that Brian was truthful the whole time.
I don't think so. And this, not okay. That I don't think it's not that I don't think that's what's going to happen. I don't think that's as interesting. And this is why. Rowan is a heavy. He is not a character, in my opinion, that can go off on his own and be Braun Strowman, right? I think that the idea that Rowan acting on his own only really works if you're launching kind of a new character. And it's much less interesting than Roman versus Brian. Brian and Roman is hot because you had that match at Fastlane that came up earlier on in this episode. You had the situation where the people wanted Daniel Bryan again and they gave us Roman Reigns. You have all this stuff that's built into this that makes this a banger feud, that makes this just incredible. And Rowan, as just a guy who just did this thing that has a limited move set and really has never done anything just as on his own that really moves the needle, just isn't very interesting. You're looking into it and seeing this as Daniel Bryan, not really knowing and kind of the nuance. Yeah, I think that is the most interesting part about it. But I don't think what we're going to end up getting, if that's the case, is a good feud. And I don't think it really maximizes your people, right? Your television time. Yeah. I also think that if Daniel Bryan didn't do this and he's in the right here, well, doesn't that start Daniel Bryan's babyface turn again?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to see that. He's been so good as a heel that I'm not ready for it. There's plenty of other things that he can do. So that's why I'm not that thrilled about that idea. I'm hoping that Daniel Bryan asked Rowan to put him through a table. I'm hoping that Daniel Bryan has masterminded all of this, because I think the angle overall is so much better for it. But that's me.
Yeah. And you know, if that is how it turns out to be, I'm still going to be pretty satisfied, because I think that this storyline has taken me on a journey that has made me question what is going on and second guess everything that's going on. So yeah, keeps me guessing. I like that. I don't always want to feel like I know exactly what's going on. Twists and turns are always nice. All right, so that does it for TV. We've talked about, as Kevin alluded to in the intro, the cold open, NXT is coming to television very soon, like national television, cable television, not just the network, along with AEW's TV show, 2 weeks after that. And it's going to make wrestling very difficult for us to keep up with. We don't exactly know how we're going to do it yet. AEW just had All Out this past weekend, crowned their first champion. Chris Jericho is the champion. He lost the championship, not lost it in a title match. It was stolen from him, apparently, in real life. This is a funny developing story that's going on right now. And it's... Have you heard anything about All Out that it intrigues you?
I read all the results, and I don't know a lot of the characters, quite honestly. I think that the idea of putting the title on Jericho is probably a good thing. He is the most marketable name out there. I cannot remember who it was. It might have been Corbin, who was doing an interview recently and said something to the effect of, you know, everyone that's pissed off that Brock Lesnar has been the champion, anyone who's pissed off that Brock Lesnar has been champion and likes Chris Jericho is basically an idiot, because it's the same exact thing. Jericho's actually older than Lesnar. That's not why people are upset. It wasn't age. Yeah. It was the fact that Brock Lesnar was a part-time person, was kind of one-dimensional in most ways. And there were tons of other talented people that should have held that title in the biggest wrestling company in the world. AEW is in a situation where they have to make a big splash. They have to bring in the lapsed wrestling fan that's not watching the WWE anymore. And Chris Jericho has to be the person, because he's the most marketable name, the biggest name. He's a full-time wrestler for them. And he's also one of the most evolved, complex characters that we've seen in the history of professional wrestling. He's constantly reinvented himself. Yes, he's getting a little bit long in the tooth. I don't know that he's still putting on the kind of matches that he once did, but he's still able to deliver on a different level. So I just wanted to throw that out there, because I thought it was so preposterous that he would say that. And anyone that was kind of on board with that, I think you're looking at it the wrong way.
I agree with that.
Yeah, so there were the things that I heard about the pay-per-view were very, very solid, very strong. And I'm not going to be able to get into this company until I see the weekly shows.
Yeah.
That's just me. So I've kind of, while watching or reading about the results, I just kind of, you know, keep it in the background, see some of the things that are going on, and when it comes on. On Wednesday nights, I'll be able to kind of dive in a little bit more. But I am also, I don't know how we're going to cover all this. I don't know when we're going to record. I don't know. But
yeah, because SmackDown's going to be moving to Friday nights.
Oh, yeah.
In November.
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to have to figure it out sooner rather than later. And whatever form this takes, we'll just kind of roll with it, right?
Yeah. That's kind of an update on how things are going. We are actually entering into our fifth year of doing this podcast. Just like a week ago was our anniversary of the first episode that we ever did. This is now our 216th episode. We don't usually talk about the number of episode that we're on or how long we've been doing this or have celebrated anniversaries. But yeah, I mean, this is something we've been doing for a long time. We've evolved with it to the best that we can, going from being an every 2 week show or like just doing the shows every so often to doing it every week now, except for a break here and there. We'll figure out a way. We'll find out a way to evolve with this once again, just like Chris Jericho has evolved with his career, but not as good. But we'll see how things work themselves out there. Anything else you want to touch on at all before we finish up here?
No, man. Listen, we made the joke about the fact that there's just too much wrestling, and I've said this multiple times for anyone that listens on a regular basis. I've got a small child. We both have wives and fiancés, and we have people that we want to spend time with, and it's going to be really hard to watch this amount of professional wrestling. But at the end of the day, this is the best thing for wrestling fans, and we're excited for NXT to be on cable TV. We're excited for AEW starting. We may have to evolve as fans. We might have to be more selective on what we watch, but we're happy. Or I'm sorry, I shouldn't speak for you. I'm happy that we're getting all this. It's just, I'm a completionist that wants to watch everything, and it's just going to be harder as that goes forward.
Yeah, I'm happy too. I believe that this is a long time coming. Some other company out there to keep WWE in check, make them really have to put out the best product that they can possibly can, and not just kind of fall back on just doing the same old shit over and over again and hoping that you'll always get the same pay-per-view buys, even though they don't really have to worry about that, but the same gates and the same merch sales on things. So, yeah, it's an exciting time to be a true professional wrestling fan, not just be a WWE fan, but to be a wrestling fan, to see there being competition again. I'm not saying that this is Monday Night Wars, but it's an interesting time. Yeah, indeed. Other than that, make sure that you guys, check us out on our social media, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/MissSpots, follow us on Twitter and Instagram @MissSpots, subscribe to the show in whichever way is best for you for listening to it, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, Google Podcasts, all of those wonderful places you can listen to the show. Also on our website, MissSpots.com or MissSpotsPodcast.com. You can also hear us every Friday night on Geek Life Radio at geekliferadio.com at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central. For Kevin, my name's Mike. We'll catch you next week for our preview and predictions of Clash of Champions. Good night. Good wrestling.